Welcome to Crossbody of Work. My name is Evan.
I am Javier.
Just like Dolph Ziggler at Wrestle Kingdom, we are back, baby.
Oh, we're back and we're ready to bring prestige to the global. Oh, no, we're not fighting for a title?
We're not fighting for a title. It is I, the Ryan Nemeth, to your Nick Nemeth, and we are here to celebrate Japanuary for the second time. It's our month where we just cover wrestlers from Japanese promotions. Very excited.
You know, nothing screams Japan more than a Dominican man and a Portuguese white man. Nothing. There's nothing that screams more than
we,
that.
Though we are big fans of the Japanese wrestling style, and we have a big mix of wrestling that we're going to cover this month, starting with something that we really haven't touched on in almost 200 episodes. I don't think we covered a single match from this promotion until
there may have
now.
Been one.
I can't remember it if we did.
It would have been like a Foley, if Foley was involved in it, maybe.
Yeah.
We haven't done Terry Funk, really. So.
No, we haven't done Funker yet. No, this week we cover Atsushi Onita and we cover FMW.
Oh my God.
Things are going to explode.
Yes. For those who don't know FMW.
Guarantee I have.
Yeah, for those who don't know FMW, we'll talk about it shortly. Evan, do the whole podcast spiel.
Sure. On this podcast, we cover wrestler through five of their most important matches. So for Onita, it is the formation of and the expansion of FMW. That was his baby. So we are going to cover kind of the breadth of FMW while it was Onita's baby, his retirement, his return, all that good stuff. Before we dive into anything further, if you're watching on YouTube, hello, you should hit subscribe. If you're listening, wherever you're listening, be sure to rate 5 stars. Help us out tremendously. Share these episodes with your friends, all that good stuff. At Crossbody, work on all the socials, but you already knew that. Atsushi Onita was the first true graduate of the All Japan Dojo. Did you know that?
Really?
So Jumbo Tsuruta had debuted first, but had done some training with Dory Funk Jr. and Terry Funk in Amarillo, Texas. So technically the first like exclusively trained person from the All Japan Dojo is Onita.
That is awesome. I did not know that. That is an incredible fun fact.
And then he became a big part of the All Japan Junior Heavyweight Division. So in the late 70s, New Japan had kind of formed its Junior Heavyweight Division, and it had Tiger Mask and Sayama and Fujinami. Fujinami was like overseeing it. That was a big thing. So they decided like, well, we need an ace of the All Japan one, and they picked Onita. And so Baba was able to get Onita and Chavo Guerrero, not that one, his dad, to come to the All Japan Wrestling side, and Guerrero brought the NWA International Junior Heavyweight Championship to make it like its junior heavyweight title. So I didn't realize that was like Onita's background was as a junior heavyweight in All Japan.
That honestly shocks me, because he's a pretty, well, I don't want to say he's a pretty tall guy, but comparatively, like, he's not a short dude.
No, and that's like, kind of what you would think in that time, is that if you were a shorter guy, you would be a...
Yeah, like when I think of juniors, I think of like, you know, Tiger Mask, I think of,
Pegasus Kid, you know, Eddie, yeah.
Like, I think of like shorter guys, maybe like 5'6 to like 5'9.
Onita listed 5'11. So, you know, teetering on 6 foot. Like, if he lied on dating profiles, okay, he's 6 foot. So...
Who would ever know?
Who would know? What are you gonna do? Measure them? Get out of here!
Can you imagine though if they just whipped out the tape just as soon as they see you? They gotta measure. They gotta see if you line up with the chains.
Yeah, move the chains. I have seen things where like houses of like university girls have like a 6 foot marker on their door, like they measure feet. So like if a guy's walking in, it's like. Is he at the mark?
Yeah, but do they factor in shoes? Because if you're just wearing like Jordans or something, like you're fine.
Me and my 6-inch heels, baby. So Onita did go on some excursions, and that's where our promo takes place this week. It is in Memphis Wrestling. We get a promo that it's not really Onita cutting the promo.
Yeah, but you know, I wanted something with him talking and like really early in his career, because he doesn't, there's like no footage of him wrestling until like 88.
Literally until FMW like comes into fruition, there's not a lot of clips of him wrestling.
And it's just that. It's just clips. Like, they're All Japan clips, but yeah, there's nothing.
You can see him hit, like, a hip toss. And you're like, oh, okay.
Yeah, so I also wanted to keep this strictly FMW as far as the in-ring stuff. There's a bunch of promos at the end of matches and stuff like that, because he's literally the owner, so he's the main event.
But also, we do not speak Japanese.
Yeah, that's very important.
Also, do not come with translations. I said this last Japan you were at.
Not even subtitles.
No, not even subtitles. I would love it if somebody could translate some of these promos for us, because some of them sound really impassioned and, like, really intense, and I don't know what's going on. So we do have a translator for this, though, because it is Masafuji and Onita, and they're with Tojo. I've never heard of Tojo before.
I don't know, but I like that name.
I do, too.
Tojo.
Tojo.
Tojo sounds like you're in, like, a Pixar movie or a Disney movie, and there's, like, the main character, and then there's, like, the pet. That's what the character
is. Yeah, and then there's Tojo. So they're talking because both Fuchi and Onita had lost a world title match, and the Memphis wrestler interviewer was like, I'm surprised you're still here because you lost the match and said you would be leaving. And Tojo's like, nah, we're going to go for the tag titles.
Yeah. Yeah, who needs to be Jerry Lawler when you could just win the other titles?
You just win the other two titles. Jerry Lawler can't have both tag titles, can he? In Memphis, he could.
He could do anything he wants. He
probably did. And then a man appears who says he wants to manage them. Did you recognize this man at first?
Yes, but that's just because I know what Jimmy Hart looks like.
Without his sunglasses, I have no fucking idea what Jimmy Hart looks like.
Jimmy Hart without his sunglasses?
Until this moment, I don't think I had. And then I just was like,
I can tell by the hair. Just the hair alone was enough for me.
Well, it took me a second. I was like, is that Jimmy Hart? Why does he have sunglasses on?
It's also Memphis. So if a manager is coming up behind, I'm like, okay, it's either Jimmy Hart or it's just someone I'm never going to recognize.
And Jimmy Hart's saying, like, he wants to manage Fuchi and Onita, and Tojo's like, absolutely not. You don't speak Japanese, which is a very valid point.
I'm going to manage these guys.
Is Jimmy Hart just like a bad Chris Tucker impression? Because that is not wrong.
Oddly enough, I'm very proud of my Chris Tucker impersonation. My Chris Tucker impressions. I really am. Because I could just quote Rush Hour and Rush Hour 2.
Well, like Rush Hour is just an incredibly quotable movie.
$50 million? Who do you think you got there, Chelsea Clinton?
I love that movie. It also reignited my love for the song Fantasy by Mariah Carey. Oh.
Yeah. It started it way back in the day for me because I didn't know that song and I was a child watching Rush Hour and I was like, hold up.
Hold up. This little girl cooking. Onita and Fuchi get on the microphone. They cut a promo in Japanese that we don't understand, but Tojo is here. And Tojo says they respect the land of the rising sun. All American wrestlers are sissified, which is a fantastic word to use. Japanese wrestlers are number one in the whole world and all American wrestlers are crybaby.
I just want, like, who's someone that toes the line in, like, a grisly way? It's like, oh, these youngsters don't know anything about the grind of pro wrestling, you know, something like that. Like, who's
I feel like someone... Drew McIntyre is, like, weirdly approaching that.
Is it because I made that voice? Is that why you're from Drew McIntyre?
Yeah,
no, it's not Drew. It's more like I don't know, like freaking Moxley. Can you just imagine if Moxley just comes out and it's just like these freaking sissy wrestlers, like sissified wrestlers, like Daniel Garcia over here hip thrusting. I don't know nothing about hip thrust. You know what hip thrust is supposed to be for? Leverage.
I thought you were about to say sex. Yeah, I actually could 100% see Moxley doing that. They say how they're going to put the Japanese flag on the bodies after they throw the Yankees. It's a very cut and paste 80s foreign heel promo.
Yeah. It's 1981, guys.
It's 1981. On January 3rd, 1985, Onita retired for the first time. Right? Doesn't that put a weird wrench into our thing? It's because
he's been, what, like 28?
It's because of accumulated injuries. He had previously taken a long hiatus and then was in the midst of an attempted comeback when he retired. But then he returned to the ring in 88. When he did, he issued a challenge to the shoot style promotion, UWF. The challenge was rejected, and he responded by taking on Masashi Oyagi in a worked martial arts fight for the World Karate Association. And then he was like, hey, this shit's really working. Let's do this again. And so then he promoted two shows under the Frontier Martial Arts Wrestling banner, FMW, and that's where FMW was born. Our first match... is a match against Oyagi.
Masashi Oyagi.
Yeah, on October 6th, 1989 at FMW number one, the very first one.
Is this number one or is it number two?
Well, oh, maybe it is number two, because yes, this is the one in Nagoya. So this is, oh, this one is listed first, though. So I do think this is the first one.
All right. I know they had two, and they were very close together.
An FMW person will be able to correct us, but yeah, it was listed on Wikipedia. They list Nagoya first and then Tokyo second, so I assume that one came first.
Let me tell you something about this match. I had no idea what the rules were. I didn't know what was going on, but I have you know that primal, like, urge that all men have where you just see two people fighting and you're like,
you're drawn in. Yeah.
You're like, I'm in. Like, I for some, I was just there. That's just what happened with
you. You were the Kevin Hart gif, "It's about to go down."
It's not even that. I just saw, like, the match start. Like, the match actually doesn't even start. Onita just jumps Oyagi from behind. And, like, before anything happens, he puts on an arm bar. He's, like, working the shit out of this martial arts motherfucker. And then I'm just, like,
drawn in. Suckered in. Now, a couple things about the video. One, Onita's in the blue trunks, which thankfully say Onita. We will learn that he has one outfit, and he wears it all of the time. Onita is the Steve Jobs of wrestling. He has one outfit.
I mean, you could also say it's the Eddie Kingston of pro wrestling. Eddie Kingston has one outfit.
That's true as well.
And he just replaces the tank top on it.
This is also being filmed like it's a secret. Like, this is filmed, like, through a fence or something. Oh,
now, here's the thing, is my grandfather was there with a handheld phone.
With a crank?
Yeah.
He's just watched it like that?
No, actually, this is my father. He would have been in his 20s at this point. He's over there on excursion for some reason, just taping this.
I feel like a private eye watching somebody cheat on their wife. Like, that's how this is filmed.
What was that show, Cheaters? Is that what it was?
I mean, probably. That sounds
you're Canadian. I can't trust you with this. Cheaters I think it was Cheaters. It's literally a show where, like, they're like, someone hires a private eye, like, team, which is, like, basically, like, what's the pedophile finder guy?
Oh, like Steve Hansen.
Steve Hansen. Whatever the Steve Hansen show was, it's basically that, but instead of finding pedophiles, they found cheaters.
Okay, I get it. So, that's how this feels. And then you're right. In terms of the style, the match, there's rounds, I assume, because they take breaks.
I have no idea what was going on. I didn't know how this match this ended. I didn't know if there was judges, scorecards. There are breaks, and there's hands being thrown.
To start the second round, Ayagi comes out and hits one of the coolest kick combinations I have ever seen in my life that ends with a spinning head kick that I thought decapitated Onita.
Brother, he just went full Anthony Pettix. Like, the Showtime kick that he hits on Benson Henderson. That, but the other direction, is essentially what this motherfucker did. So
we also need to mention, the crowd is absurd. They're so hot for this match.
Yeah. I don't know what... I don't know if Aoyagi is just, like, that famous. I don't think it's because Onita is this hot, because there's no fucking way this dude was retired for this long, being a junior in All Japan for essentially the crux of his career.
Yeah. I kind of think it's bloodlust. Like, it just seems like it's like watching Bloodsport. Bloodsport hadn't even been, has Bloodsport been invented yet?
The movie, no. Actually, yeah, I think Bloodsport the movie was out.
1988. That's what this is. It's because of Bloodsport. Wait, when did Bloodsport come out? Jean-Claude
Van Damme, right? That's Bloodsport?
But February of 98, or of 88. So, yeah, that's exactly,
you know what?
Yeah.
We'll take it. It's just violence, man. It gets the people going.
Round three begins. More elbows and strikes from Onita. This poor ref is trying to get between them for some reason.
He just keeps getting pushed away.
Yeah. We get huge strikes by Aoyagi, knocks down Onita, back suplex by Onita, and then this, like, unbelievable front roll kick by Aoyagi that knocks down Onita. He hits his heel, hits the very top of Onita's head. It's outstanding.
Which, admittedly, I feel like it's probably, like, the perfect place to place it if you want to, like, be safe.
Yeah, because like anywhere else, you kind of fuck something onto, like, a nose or something, like, you're breaking that.
Like, here, there's, like, you know, whiplash.
I can,
like,
take
down,
it.
Like, right here, down, you're good.
He just flexed the forehead.
At what point Aoyagi took off his top? Because he's wearing a gi. He's fighting. He's doing this match in a gi. And he takes off the top, which I didn't realize gis came in twos, in two parts. I thought it was just one.
I wrote here, coming out for round four, and Aoyagi, much like your dad six beers into the tailgate, has gone tarps off. He is ready to go.
He takes off the top. They start fighting ringside, and Ivan, I kid you not, so I watch all of the matches on my iPad.
Yeah.
I have like my girlfriend got me this like thing where you can place the iPad. It's like made out of like, it's like plushy kind of.
Okay.
It's basically a stand. Basically, I could just put it on myself and I don't have to worry about the iPad tipping over.
That's good.
And so I took that, I put it on the freaking ottoman, and I was just sitting at the edge of my, on the couch like this. Like hand in hand, like
just very good. What is going on?
I have no more notes because like I could not take notes.
Like I said, we are watching this on a handycam, and the guy can't see ringside from where he is, so we have no idea what happens at ringside.
I just see bodies, and I'm like, this is everything I've ever wanted.
So back into the ring, Onita gets up at like a count of seven, because I'm kind of counting what the ref is counting. Proceeds to get his chest caved in with a kick. Up again, spinning head kick. Down goes Onita. The end of the round happens. Onita is in a bad way. Round five, and Aoyagi immediately channels into Beastie Boys. Kick it. Rolling head kick again. And the towel is thrown in. That's how this match ends, with a towel throw in.
Because it is just a constant barrage of kicks and strikes and the ref pushing Aoyagi back and Aoyagi just saying, fuck that. Kick, strike, kicks. It's just constant. Like, he just does not relent. And there's no shot Onita's, like, going to be fine. Like, he's never mounting any offense. Like, there should have been a ref stoppage, if anything.
Yeah.
But yes, the towel needed to be thrown in because it got to the point where I was just ready to be like, throw the damn towel.
This was a very weird match, and it's only going to get more intense.
There was a huge brawl after the match, too.
It took like 40 people to pull these two away from each other. It's a weird time. We're going to take a break. When we get back, it's time for the ring to explode. Back from the break, and we have Onita versus Tarzan Goto, August 4th, 1990. Goto looking like the scariest man on the planet, and Onita continuing to have one outfit.
I gotta say it, Tarzan Goto has got to be the greatest wrestling name in the history of
absolutely
wrestling.
Absolutely.
Tarzan Goto, that is sensational.
He's got a yellow singlet on, and he makes a yellow singlet look tough. He's dressed like mustard, and he's still like, oh, man. I'm tough.
It's like, it's him and Kawada. Those are the only people who can make yellow look good.
That's fair. This is the first ever no ropes exploding barbed wire death match. Onita is defending the brass knuckles heavyweight championship here.
All right. So yeah. So here's the thing. So I know FMW. I'm not dumb. I know that this is where it gets hard. It gets hardcore. It just does. But I figured that we would have like at least a few, like two matches before it would happen. Nah, man, we got a year. We didn't even make it a year, pretty much.
We didn't even make it a year.
So I'm like, the match starts, and I'm like, oh, cool. Because I don't notice the ropes yet. I don't notice the barbed wire yet. I didn't know what was going on. So the match starts. I'm like, oh, cool, here we go. All right. And then Onita touches the rope, and it pops on him. And I'm like, oh, we've already started.
So the ropes are barbed wire. Like I said, and they are rigged to when you touch them at certain parts, there's an explosion. And
I don't know how they do it.
I have no idea how they do it either. I need one of those like behind the curtain views where I'm like, here's show me thing, how you set this
is
up.
Is that the Japanese are so freaking advanced in everything that they do that like I'm not at all surprised. But it's like, shit, how the hell do they do this? Because there's no way that's just like a live wire. Because that is so incredibly dangerous, but also it's pro wrestling, so who the fuck knows?
Maybe. My favorite thing is that Onita backs into the barbed wire after getting headbutt, and it explodes. And then as he's getting up, he touches the rope again, and it explodes again. And I was like,
he's like, fuck.
Touch the ropes. Goto with like a huge power bomb, locks in a figure four. Onita's crawling to the ropes. I'm like, no, don't go there. That's bad.
Yeah, this is a last man standing match, I found out really quickly.
Onita is bleeding from the arm from the explosion, like immediately and deeply.
He also manages to get a cut on the exact same part of his tank top in every single one of these matches.
I'm not convinced that there's not like a blood pack underneath his shirt that he just immediately pops.
No, because it's literally a cut. It's a slice across the shirt. It's the exact same slice in all three, like all of these matches pretty much.
I don't think he has one outfit, but you ever buy a pair of pants and you really like them, so you buy like four more pairs?
I literally bought the same three pack of socks from Costco yesterday.
Yeah. If it works, do it again. I have like three of the same like sweatshirt in just different colors.
And I respect that. Holy. I have two sweatshirts. One's navy blue, one's white. I like to buy things in twos. Like I have two cargo pants. One's black, one's brown.
Buy it in pairs. Man, Onita,
if it works for
has
you,
70
just do it in different
blue
colors.
Trunks with his name on them.
No, see, here's the thing. I think the trunks are the same color, or the same trunks. I don't think he has multiple pairs of those. I think the trunks are the same ones. He just new tank top.
Listen, now, you are not in exploding death match fucking barbed wire things without peeing yourself a little bit at least once.
You're what is the washing trunks machine for, if not to get rid of all the bodily fluids?
Oh.
His dry cleaning fees must be crazy.
Onita rolls near the ropes after getting hit with a takedown, and it fucking explodes again.
Yeah, it pops. Because the tip of his head, he like lands backwards. It just pops on his fucking head.
Goto's just hitting power slams and figure fours. That's his whole setup.
Back suplex at one point here. He does like the forward tombstone. I don't even know what the fuck. Like the bro Derek.
I was like, this is like a face first from a powder position. It looks like if you just didn't do all the steps to a Styles Clash.
it's literally you get him in the power driver position and then you lean forward. It becomes a slam instead of a power driver. Anyways, and then he hits another one. Onita's back is bleeding, and because he sets off the freaking explosion so many times. He
keeps setting off explosions.
And then finally he gets his freaking lick back. He hits a running forearm that sends Goto fucking flying. Yeah. Straight back, like he did not have to sell it this well. Flying back into the wire lets off a nasty pop. Nasty. Yeah. Onita hits a power bomb. He hits a DDT, but it's not a normal DDT. It's like the Undertaker American Badass DDT, where he just
cranks the guy up there. Hits another power bomb, and then Goto can't answer the count of 10.
And no, so he hits another power bomb. Goto gets up. Another DDT.
Right. Another powerbomb.
A third powerbomb. This time with a spike. He landed like right here.
Yeah.
If you're watching on YouTube, it's like here is where he landed. Goto's not getting up. First off, I don't think he could get up from that powerbomb. I think he's freaking paralyzed now after taking that bump. But Onita wins.
Base of the skull, for those of you who are not watching on YouTube. Right at the base of the skull. It's a bad time. Onita was blown up a lot, and he still won. What I get from these matches is a little bit of like if Triple H took over WWE while he was still an active wrestler. Like, listen, the people came to see me, all right?
It's like, here's the thing, though. Like, they did.
They did come to see Onita. You're right. Maybe it's like if John Cena took over the booking.
I don't think he's the top guy there. I mean, because it's between, we'll get to some of the top. I mean, the next match is him and Terry Funk. Terry Funk was a top guy in FMW for a while there.
As he should be. Anything before, with deathmatch in it, Terry Funk is the top guy by default.
I'm pretty sure Terry Funk is the reason why they made the partnership with ECW.
That would make sense. That tracks to me. Yeah, let's dive right into it. Our next match, May 5th, 1993. Onita versus Funk in an exploding ring match. From Wikipedia, the first ever no ropes exploding barbed wire time bomb death match at their fourth anniversary show. Time bomb death match. Now, time limits, an important thing in wrestling. I think very valuable thing to know what kind of match, like, you know, 60 minutes for the main, 30 minutes for the semi, maybe 20 for the undercard. If the ring's going to explode at a certain time, I don't think I'd be in the match. I think I'm good.
You know, I don't know how to tell you this, but I guess some of us are just built different.
Yeah, built stupid.
I don't feel like some of us are built different. I mean this genuinely. I do not think there is a match that we've done on this podcast, aside from Eddie Brock, where I have been more excited to watch, like, heading into it.
So you knew about this match?
Yeah, I mean, this is pretty... I don't know, I'd say, like, outside of the major promotions, this is probably one of the most famous matches in the history of pro wrestling.
I'd say you're right. Things I didn't know about this very famous match. One, Onita comes out to Wild Thing.
Oh, yeah. My first note was, I've never been more excited for a match. My second note was, anyways, Evan, did you find out why Moxley uses Wild Things now?
It all makes sense. It all ties together. I'm sitting there and I'm like, huh, this sounds like a weird version of Wild Thing. And then the chorus hit. And I was like, this is Wild Thing. It's like, I don't know if I've told this story before on the podcast, but I was at a country music festival back in my drinking days. I know, it's not like me at all.
Yeah, you had to be a drinking days. It's fine. There's no other reason to go to one.
And my friend and I are at the main stage. And the guy who's opening, because the next act is a guy named Sam Hunt, who's like a big country music guy. And the guy who's opening for him is doing a Sam Hunt cover. And he's doing a very bad job. And we were like, that's a bold decision to cover Sam Hunt before Sam Hunt comes on. And then one of my less drunk friends was like, that's Sam Hunt. And we were like, oh no, he's just bad at singing live. So we didn't put, also, like I couldn't see. I'm 5'6".
You didn't know what he looked like, bro?
I'm 5'6". I couldn't see that man. My friend is 6'4". You've met him. No name, but you've met him.
Big man.
Big man. He should have seen. But we were
appreciative. Yeah, but how red was he?
We were all very red. It was country. It was country music o'clock. I was in jean shorts. It was a time.
One thing I learned about Evan's friend group: they get very red when they drink alcohol.
That's white people. The referee's dressed like a knight.
Well, that's just protection, man.
Meanwhile, Onita's in the only gear he has, and Funk is shirtless.
Funk is in the only gear he's ever worn after, like, 1985.
Funk's in the only thing he brought on the plane.
Terry Funk in, like, 1985, 1986, or whatever the hell time period it was, decided to stop wearing his, like, trunks, and he just went into the long tights.
Yeah.
He's just wore the exact same tights the entirety of his time.
What a wild time. So the match itself, there's some pushing. That's the whole beginning.
Nah, this is great. But this is fantastic. It's pushing. It's basically jockeying to see who could go and send who into the wires. Terry Funk hits a power driver for a near fall. He hits the most swinging of swinging neck breakers I've ever seen and follows it up with a knee drop for a near fall.
Yeah.
And then he whips Onita hard into the wire.
The explosions in the last match were like a lot, like things popped. They were alarming.
Yeah, it's like these explosions, those little poppers that you throw on the ground and pop.
These explosions, level buildings. Like, what is going on
this
here?
Is dangerous. Because, all right, so Onita takes a back. Like, he goes back first because he just took a whip. He basically is like he's hitting the ropes as hard. He's basically hitting the ropes like he's fucking Kenny Omega.
Yeah.
But there's barbed wire there that explodes. And the second he rebounds off the barbed wire, you could see there is just a massive slice across his back through his tank top, blood. Just blood trickling. You could see the blood trickling off the side.
Now, I understand the appeal. I think what it is for me in terms of deathmatch and shit like this is the initial shock of seeing the wound whenever it happens. You're like, oh. Like when somebody's busted open the first time and they're like, you know, they have red all over, you're like, oh my God, they're bleeding. Yeah. It takes me, I think, a lot less time than other people to be like, all right, this is concerning. Like other people, I think, are like, the match continues. This is great. I'm like, he's dying.
He's slowly losing blood.
Like I have seen Ric Flair sometimes. I'm like, how much blood do you have in your body? Like, there's no way. There's no way you have that much.
The amount of alcohol that man drinks, a lot.
Never gonna die.
Woo! Yeah, so Onita switches the leverage on Funk. Funk goes face first into the wire.
Before that.
Spots in his face.
Before that, Funk is pulling Onita by his glorious mullet, trying to put his face on the barbed wire. Like, this is like a minute long spot of him just dragging Onita by the Yarmir Yager hair and like trying to put him on the fucking barbed wire. It's a lot.
Funk is bleeding profusely. And Onita hits a DDT for a near fall. Onita then just hits a shit ton of headbutts that look legit. Like, it looks like he's legit headbutting Funk. It's scary. Funk pulls him, and he goes into the wire and out of the ring and immediately sticks up his hand like this, like it's a fucking zombie coming out of a grave.
It's mangled.
It is mangled to pieces. Like, fingers are sliced. There is so much blood trickling down his arm because he has it up like at an angle, and you just see the blood trickling down on his wrist. I'm like, oh my God.
You ready for what I think is my favorite part of that whole interaction? Is the fact that before the headbutts and after the DDT from Onita, but before he hits headbutts, Funk hits a shinbreaker.
Oh, yeah.
Funk just goes into his bag of tricks and it's like, you know what'll put this over the edge? Let me just hit a shinbreaker on this man. And then Onita, like you said, lays into him with headbutts. Funk just uses his own momentum to pull him forward. And I don't think, and I use this term lightly, the ropes were supposed to not like give way. I think he was supposed to stay in the ring, but he had so much momentum that Onita went to the outside. And then, yeah, you're right. Pulls his hand up.
Hand is just
mangled. Nothing fucked there.
There are 5 minutes left until the explosion.
Onita can't find his way back into the ring because you can't get under the barbed wire.
Yeah, the ref has to like pull the wire up so he could slip in.
Oh my God. Yeah. And
Terry Funk doesn't even give this man a chance. He's just immediately on him.
Well, the timer's at 5 minutes, and Funk is a man of deadlines. He's trying to get there.
They are throwing hands.
Funk is just swinging wildly. Funk looks like Funk looks like he's dancing to Sami Zayn's theme. That's what he looks like he's doing. He's just swinging.
He's dancing to some ska music. What's wrong?
Ska defines me. And defines who I am. I will never turn my back on ska.
Terry Funk strikes me as like a man who listens to like country, but like George fucking Strait.
Yes.
Maybe like, you know, like the classic country music that like even someone like me who doesn't listen to country music knows. You know what I mean?
He listens to country music that was like, shoot your boss. Like, he listens to that kind of country music.
Like, fuck the government type of country music. Yeah, but America's great. Yeah. We love the backbone of this country.
Railroads and shit like that.
Yeah, shit like that. But he's over here, like, can you imagine that man listening to ska music?
I genuinely think he would have liked it. I genuinely think he would have been like, this is all right. Because like, it's not the same, but I had shown my stepdad some music that I'm like, he's not going to like this shit. Because my dad was like classic rock and like all that shit.
And you play some 50 Cent and he's just like.
Yeah. Like you put on I Like the Way You Move by Big Boy. And he's like, all right, I get it. I understand it. And I'm like, that's a good fucking song. That's why. Both men stumbling around. Funk kicked off by Onita back into the ropes. Onita's on his back. He kicks him off. Funk goes into the ropes. More explosions. I thought that each set of ropes only had one thing of explosions. Because up till that point, and again, I use ropes so lightly.
It's a wire.
I thought each set of barbed wire only had one thing of explosions because we had gone in order around the ring. One, two, three, four. And then Funk goes back in and explodes again. I was like, why is it still exploding?
And he takes a handful, too, because he doesn't just go back first into it. He whips his arms around and like
a flawless Funk being electrocuted impression.
And then he falls back. He comes back forward. He's stumbling. Onita grabs him, hits a DDT, and picks up the fall. Like, he wins the match, I guess.
So I was confused about the rules of the match. I was like, okay,
I don't know the rules.
I thought it was like the ring explodes and then we just see who's there. And instead, Onita gets the pin. And I was like, oh, cool. So the match is over.
There's two and a half minutes left.
Funk is choking Onita with a string he happens to have. As the timer goes down, Funk hits the ref.
Yeah, the ref is gone.
Onita starts fighting back. Another DT to Funk. A powerbomb to Funk as well. It's 1:30 left on the clock. Onita powerbombs him again. The ref is reapplying his bomb-proof suit. Because
yes, he's like, please, the match is done.
Onita throws the ref under the barbed wire to the outside.
Yes. And Funk 30 is, seconds.
Funk is lying there in the middle of the ring, not moving. What happens?
Onita leaves the match, or leaves the ring. You see him, the camera's on the opposite side of the ring, on the outside, staring at Onita. Through, like, the ring is in between. So, yeah. Camera, ring, Onita.
Yep.
This, and then you just, you see the back of Onita as he's walking away, and then quickly he turns around. He's having a crisis. He's like, do I really want to just leave this man to die? And he's like, you know what? Fuck it. He goes into the ring. He's immediately just pounding on Funk, just pounding on his chest, slapping him in the head. He's trying to get him up. He realizes he's not going to be able to do it. So what does he do in a very emotional decision? He just covers Funk. He uses him. Onita uses himself as a shield.
Him. Yeah.
And then just the massive explosion pops off. It's clearly fireworks, but it's like a big, just like it's fireworks all over the fucking ring. And it's just a huge poof of smoke. And it legit sounded like an explosion.
Now, this is what AEW was trying to do.
Yeah, they didn't get. They got sparklers, though.
They got sparklers. I don't say that they were okay. I just said Onita and Funk are alive. Like, they're clearly not okay, but they're alive. Yeah,
they've inhaled some smoke.
It's a lot. A lot is happening. I actually really like this match. I thought it was really well done for like the type of match that it is. I know this match is not going to be for everybody. But for what it is supposed to be, it was a really good example of what it's supposed to be.
I just, the way that I view this match is just like, this is one of those, like, bookmarks in wrestling history. You know what I mean? Like, this is one of those matches where, like, if you are someone who loves wrestling and you want to watch all kinds of wrestling, like, this is one of those matches that you have to watch.
Yeah, that would be a really fun list to make as like the like essential matches.
Yeah, like it's listen, it's regardless of style, like it's just you have to, if you're gonna watch the entire catalog of styles in wrestling, like if you're gonna go from like a WrestleMania main event, like you're watching Hogan Andre,
I was gonna say something like that, what, like, what's another match you would have as like essential viewing?
I feel like everyone has to watch Hogan Andre at some point. Like, it's not even that long of a match.
It's just a bad match, but it's
Rock,
a great match.
Brett is got to be one of those.
Brett Austin, like, probably.
Yes, yeah. Or sorry, not Brock Brett. Rock Austin.
Rock Austin.
Probably the second one. You know, there's a bunch of, you know, AW. There's got to be an AW match. I mean, Omega Okada, for me personally.
Mysterio Guerrero, Halloween Havoc. That's my
yes. Okay. Goldberg winning the belt from Hogan probably is one of those.
Goldberg
moments.
Getting cattle prodded. No, that's bad time.
But like, yeah, it like this is one of those matches where it's like an essential if you're gonna get the full story,
the full
of
scope
wrestling,
of wrestling.
This has to be on there.
Don't make it the AEW death match because that was
and that good. And that is why this is my recommendation for the week.
Interesting. I thought your recommendation would be the next match because you, in a text message, say that that match changed you. So, without any further ado, we're going to take a break. When we get back, we have a match between Onita and Hayabusa. Back from the break, and it's exploding cage death match because why would we not add a cage? Why would we not add a cage to this? Of course.
Yeah.
It's May 5th, 95. It's the 6th anniversary show, and it is Onita versus Hayabusa. This is
I would say the two stars of
absolutely.
FMW.
This is Onita's retirement match, the sequel.
Yeah, okay.
I love retirement matches because like, it's a retirement match. It's like, no, it's never a retirement match. You're never retiring.
You're not done. You're not done, bro.
This is our first Hayabusa match on the podcast.
I was questioned, like, that's my first note here. Is this our first Hayabusa match?
It is.
I just couldn't remember.
It is.
We've done a lot of these.
We have done a lot of these. Also, shout out, because like we have access to like with the you know the downloads, things like that. Shout out to everyone going back and listening to a lot of our episodes over the holidays.
Yes, like, we appreciate all of you.
The couple of people who listened to the Shawn Michaels three-parter in full. Shout out to you. I saw you. Number of people listening to the Paige episode. Ever since the reveal of the devil, a couple people listening to the Matt Taven episode. And shout out, I haven't told Javier this, shout out to us being number two on the Apple Podcast Wrestling Charts in Ghana. I don't know who you are who's listening, but shout out.
Love all of my Ghanaians, baby.
Yeah, shout out. Anyways, this is the first Hayabusa match on the pod. For those who don't know, how would you describe Hayabusa?
I don't even know how you would go about this. Hayabusa was just like, he's kind of like a cross. Honestly, like the best way I could probably explain it, he's kind of like a cross between Sami Zayn when he was El Generico and like fucking Rey Mysterio.
Yeah.
Like he's just this innovative fucking, like, I don't give a fuck. Like he's got some Jeff Hardy in him just as far as the attitude goes. Like
he looks such a cool presentation. He has a mask that's just pretty much, he looks like a, like he should be like a superhero. Like he looks like Sub-Zero or Scorpion in a way. Like he's got the mask that does the nose and the mouth, and his eyes are just face paint. Like it's sick.
Yes, it's incredible. No, like Hayabusa is, I am very excited to do the Hayabusa episodes. Probably gonna be definitely multiple parts. He was just an enigma. And it's a shame that it ended the way it did, but the guy is just without a doubt one of the most electric wrestlers ever. Like
for those who don't know, Hayabusa was very tragically paralyzed in a wrestling match in 2001, I believe. And then passed away in 2016. So
was it 2016?
It's 2016. Yeah.
Damn, it's already been that long.
Yeah, after a moonsault that went wrong, he was paralyzed in 2001. So we'll definitely dive into Hayabusa at some point. But this was my first like exposure on the podcast. I'd seen a couple other things with Hayabusa. I think I'd seen like similar to like, you know how everyone watched like the Steve Slayton highlight clips from like West Virginia. Like people always did that.
Yeah.
I had seen like Hayabusa like clips. There's an account on Twitter I want to shout out, Vintage Poroso, who does like all the old like Japanese wrestling from the 80s and 90s, just puts together clips of it. Outstanding.
Yes.
If you go to our Twitter feed, it's like half that. Because we're like, hey, we know this. Hey, this is great shit.
No, it's the thing with Hayabusa, I think he is legitimately one of the most clippable wrestlers ever, too. It's like,
if social media existed when he was a wrestler, like Ricochet who?
Like, you know what I mean? Like legitimately, it'd be like what we thought, like Ricochet from like 2010 to like 2015, like that level of clipability that he had going at that point, like he, like Rey Mysterio in the mid to late 90s, you know, like Hayabusa is absolutely right there with those two guys.
Onita continues to only have one wrestling gear. It's just one.
Evan, can you just Jesus Christ. Evan, can you describe the setting for this match?
So no ropes, only barbed wire, but also cage, because why not? There's like a hype package before where it looks like this match is being done like in an empty warehouse. Like you can just the ring is lit and nothing else, and you're like, this could be anywhere on Earth.
Are we in the Thunderdome?
I think we might be in the Thunderdome. Again, the pre-match hype package, I got hyped just watching it. I was like, this is really cool. I like the clips. The match itself, I'm not even going to ask you what you thought of it, because it's fucking outstanding, and I know you know that.
Yes.
I know you think
it's an excellent match.
Nobody touches anything explosive for a long time, which is good.
Yes, I actually kind of like that. I think that is also something that they were probably cognizant of, because it's these two guys. Like, if it's a Terry Funk Onita match, like, I fully expect it to be an explosion within 30 seconds. If Hayabusa is involved, you know, he's kind of a sneaky guy. He likes to run. He likes to move. He's really athletic.
Very aware.
Onita has to kind of be the veteran in this point. Like, you know, that I expect there to be kind of like a little bit of a gamesmanship type of thing going before I hear a little bit of popping.
When both men do run into the cage, the explosion is gigantic. They keep adding more explosives. And then the fucking burrito looking tinfoil wrapped referee is also down.
The clock reads 9:45.
Yes.
So we're in for another big boy explosion as well.
Onito with a side suplex for a two count. He gets a DDT. Sends Hayabusa alone into the wire for another big explosion. The ref with...
It pops right in his face.
The ref also has ski goggles on. I was like, what is going on here?
He's protecting himself, Evan.
With ski goggles!
I don't know.
The other guy had a fucking knight's helmet on. This guy's got ski goggles.
I went skiing. By the way, I went on a ski trip one time in my life when I was in sixth grade. We went as a
Why do they always send people skiing in sixth grade? Because I also went skiing in sixth grade.
We went to Lee, Massachusetts to a fucking mountain over there. I like took to it like honestly like duck to water. Like it was freaking great how quickly. Like so much so that they put me on I didn't have the poles, by the way. I think it was poles. But they put me on like the medium mountain right after. Like we were on the bunny slope, and then they were like, oh, well, the ones of you that got it, you got to move up. So I got to move up, which is cool. Still no poles. And they also didn't give us goggles.
That's weird.
For I didn't have goggles skiing? Like that whole time. Yeah, I didn't have goggles. Face was fucking freezing. Let me tell you something.
So disappointing. I went cross country skiing in the sixth grade, which, if you don't know,
what the fuck
is like walking through the woods, but worse.
Nah, and you went on a hike, but with skis.
With skis, it's so much worse. And I still remember because it was like, hey, there was like the green loop, the blue loop, and the red loop. And I was with a couple of my friends, and we were told,
not want
like,
the red loop.
We were told, like, do the blue loop, and then like a couple of you, if you want, you can do the red loop, and whatever. And my friends and I were like, green loop.
So green that motherfucker.
We figured out where the loop was, and we were just at the back, and then we just like took the green loop and just beat everybody back. And then they're like, where did you guys go? We're like, oh, we got lost a little bit, and then we just made our way back. And they were like, oh, okay, that's fine. And we're like, yes, we did the least amount of skiing today. The people from the red loop were fucking exhausted when they got back. Meanwhile, we have like hot chocolate. Shit. We're like, wow, this is great.
We did so much work today, guys, all of us.
Onito with a single leg crab. Hayabusa eventually powers out. Onito tossing in the exploding cage with 3 minutes on the clock.
Yeah.
We then get just this wicked, like, would have been clippable moment of Hayabusa. Back suplex and a standing moonsault that looks very clean.
Oh, yeah.
Normally we talk about, like, a wrestler's selling ability. I don't think we can with Onito because he's dying.
He's literally he's in pain. He's legitimately just constantly in pain. Hayabusa puts on a figure four.
Yep. They're trading slaps and headbutts, which is great.
You know what I don't want to do is headbutt a man wearing a mask. He's got cushion that I do not have.
It's like the D'Lo Brown chest protector or the Roman Reigns vest. Like, they have built-in protection.
Or Brock Lesnar's chest.
Yes. He's got all that titty meat. figure four let's locked in, like you said. Powerbomb by Onito for a two count. We get a dropkick by Hayabusa. The ring explodes as he runs into the cage, and Onito covers the referee.
That is the most terrified I've been watching any of these matches, is seeing Hayabusa go into the freaking wire as the massive explosion is going off.
This, I was like, I would pay good money to be able to understand Japanese, just because this commentator, honestly, you could just tell based on the vibe, like, this commentator is fucking giving it his all. It's so good. I can tell it's good, but I don't know what he's saying. But the emotion and the delivery, I was like, this guy is giving a masterclass, and I'll never know what he's saying.
Was it the Brock Roman match from SummerSlam, the like crazy one in Nashville? That was it Cole that was like, "What the fuck?" or something like that, like by accident on commentary.
I don't remember, but if so, that makes me love Michael Cole in a way.
Someone said "What the fuck" during some match, and that's like the only one in recent memory that I can think of that would necessitate that sort of reaction.
That's fair.
No, but like right after that, so there is just smoke and like ash everywhere, because I don't know what the hell they did, but I legitimately believe they might have just set off like four bombs and barrels on the four corners of the ring.
Yeah, I have no idea how, why, like what was actually used, but just things.
It's concerning. It's like a fucking volcano went off, bro.
Onita hits a power bomb. Hayabusa kicks out.
Yeah.
What?
It's a stack. It's not even just a powerbomb. It's a stack powerbomb. Like, powerbomb into a Frankensteiner by Hayabusa for a near fall. He hits a powerbomb. He climbs up to the top of the cage because he doesn't have to worry about explosions anymore.
It's not going to explode anymore, we think.
He climbs up to the top of the cage. He goes for a moonsault from the top of the fucking cage. Onita moves. Wow, man.
Yeah.
Stack powerbomb for a near fall. Regular powerbomb. Stack powerbomb. And Onita wins the match.
This is my recommendation of the week. This match slaps. It also has the biggest explosions, but you don't have to worry about Terry Funk getting exploded in the middle of the ring. So both are very good choices. So
yeah.
After the match, Onita did retire. He vacated the title and went to pursue an acting career. During this time, he starred in a movie called Dangan, which is Japanese for bullet, which would later be adopted as the nickname for Onita's pupil, Masato Tanaka, who I'm very familiar with from ECW. That is his pupil.
Really?
Yes, and that explains why Masato Tanaka can take 45 headshots with chairs and just be like, what's for breakfast? Onita's acting career flopped, and he returned to wrestling. After a sabbatical in which he got his high school diploma, because Onita had actually dropped out of high school when he was 16, he made a surprise return to FMW in March of 96 to rescue FMW's team from an attack by the Puerto Rican Army. Not the actual Puerto Rican Army, but a group called the Puerto Rican
Army. Don't know if there is an extensive Puerto Rican Army.
I don't believe there is. And so he was convinced by the FMW wrestlers to be on the team that challenged the Puerto Rican Army at the anniversary show. Then he denounced himself as an FMW wrestler in September and formed an NWO theme faction called Zen, with WING members and FMW wrestlers Tetsuhiro Kuroda. And as a result, Onita turned heel for the first and only time in FMW history. And that's where our last match takes us. It is a War Games match, December 22nd, 1997. They call it War Games. We'll talk about that in a second.
Okay.
It's a War Games match of Onita, Mr. Gennosuke, and Yukihiro Kanemura versus Hayabusa, Masato Tanaka, and Jinsei Shinzaki. Now, War Games as we know it has how many rings, Javier?
Two.
How many rings are here?
This is one ring with a cage, like a proper cage like match. A proper type cage.
Also, in War Games, a team gets the advantage and they come in every couple minutes, right? It's like one person comes in. This, they just let them both in at the same time.
Yeah, it's just one and one. Go in, run, sprint into the ring.
The match starts with Hayabusa and Kanemura, who is wearing a fucking fantastic hockey jersey type merch.
Yes, it's fantastic.
Want that immediately. What do you think of the match overall before we dive into all the...
I thought this was just pure chaos and so much fun. Like, if you have to take notes for this match, terrible. Terrible fucking... Terrible honestly, one of the worst matches I've ever, like, had to take notes for. As far as, like, the actual taking notes process.
It's this and when we covered World War III on one of our minisodes, which you should go watch on YouTube.
Yes, it's a nightmare. But, like... It's also partly because I'm so captivated by the action going on. Like, this is insane. So I looked up the way I found these matches, aside from the Terry Funk match and the Hayabusa match, was pretty much I looked up a list of FMW, like, best matches ever. And some guy, shout out, I don't know his name, but shout out to the guy who posted his top 100 FMW matches ever and then also posted all of them on YouTube.
Yeah.
Love that man. Truly. This was like third on the list.
Yeah. This was really high.
This was the highest of the bunch that we've covered so far.
It's really high.
And honestly, I think this might be the best match that we cover this week.
I think what it was too is that the angle was hot. Like Zen versus FMW was a hot angle. Like, yes, it is kind of a retread of NWO, but at the same time, like it was hot and fresh there. It was hot and fresh in this company. I'm going to just say who comes in order just because we're not going to be able to go through all the beats of this match because holy shit. So no the way. Next two people in are, I believe the next two people in are Masato Tanaka and Mr. Gennosuke. And then the last two people are in are Onita and Shinzaki. Onita finally has different gear, by the way. And it's something he clearly stole from Bret Hart.
But here's the thing, though. Does he? Because it looks like he has the same pants, but it's just a black shirt on.
No, he has a black, the black pants now too.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he has black pants. They have a little bit of pink on them, and I was like, oh, you're Bret Hart.
No, he's Owen actually.
What was your favorite spot or thing from the match? Give me a couple.
So it's hands on site at the beginning. I love that. When Gonosuke comes into the ring, him and Kanemaru just decide we're going to use all of the weapons. There's already a ladder in the ring.
Yeah.
Pretty much like as soon as the match starts, and then they grab chairs. Gonosuke comes in with chairs and they just start creating chaos with it. Tanaka is fucking up Kanemaru at one point here with a chair and just like literally beating his ass while
clotheslines to the back of the head too. Yeah.
Yeah. While Hayabusa is just dogging Gonosuke. Onita is only able to get into the ring by climbing the cage.
Yeah, he was not getting let in.
He has to climb the cage. And then my favorite spot of the match is Kanemaru's on the top rope in the corner, right?
Yeah.
Shinzaki is on him and just rocking his shit up against the cage, like literally into, like just beating his ass. He's literally hitting moves like in strikes of all kinds on top of the top rope, up against the cage.
It's outstanding.
It's hilarious.
My favorite thing in this match is that you look around, and if you look closer, you're like, it's a bunch of handcuffs on this cage. Yeah. Like, Mr. Gray will see you now. Like, what the fuck is going on? Like, I was like, why are there handcuffs all over the cage? And it's because it ends up being a big spot, is that Shinzaki gets handcuffed to the cage, and he can't really help. Though, he just powers out because he's a fucking superhero.
Nah, but here's the thing, though, is he still somehow hits a super kick and also puts on a chokehold while handcuffed?
Yeah. Well, no, because he gets handcuffed, breaks out, gets re-handcuffed, and then hits that super kick, hits a chokehold. Also, during this whole thing, Masato Tanaka takes like 6 chair shots because that's just his favorite thing to do.
He took so much head trauma between the ladder, the chair, and the cage. I can't even just, like, I've lost count.
Also, Team Zen hits what I called like the slowest 3D I've ever seen to Hayabusa.
Nah, here's the thing though. It was a stunner. Like, they both hit stunners, but it's the greatest thing ever. I actually like they were really trying
to
set it.
Like, it was like a 3D, but it was like if you were walking through with someone how to do a 3D, you'd be like, all right, and then this happens, right? Okay, and then he's going to grab him. Very slow.
Gonosuke. I think a little before that, hit a falcon arrow to Hayabusa on a chair. Then Kanemaru came off the top or off the ladder actually with an elbow drop, and I thought that was pretty cool. They are just doing everything in here. So right after that 3D stunner kind of thing, Tanaka hits a DVD Death Valley Driver on Onita for a near fall. There's a stack power bomb for a near fall. Hayabusa then goes up to the top. I think it's Shinzaki holds Onita down.
Yep.
While Hayabusa hits a moonsault off the top of the cage onto him. 1, 2, 3. The baby faces win, but they really lose in the end because the heels just beat their fucking asses.
Heels get the heat back immediately. This is the only time Onita loses in all the matches we cover.
Yeah. Holy shit, yeah.
Like FMW, the baby faces win, baby. Like that, just win. Al Davis would have loved FMW.
Here's the thing, though, is like, can you imagine going through a grueling like 15, 20? Also, another thing I loved about these matches, not that long.
No, long clips. Like the video for the Hayabusa one's 35 minutes long, but it's like 8 minutes of intro stuff, and then like 12 minutes after the match of some promos. So it's really like a 15 minute match.
Yeah. Like, it's like 15, you get like a 12 to 20 minute on like pretty much all of these. And it's just, you're in, you're having the best time of your life, and you're out. And that's what I love about FMW. You're in, you're just having a great time, and you're out. I cannot show any of these matches to my girlfriend. None. Onita, she still to this day talks to me about the barbed wire match that Chris Jericho had with Eddie Kingston.
Oh, okay.
Or John Moxley. I don't even remember. One of those two. And she does not let me live it down.
Did she ever see the Nick Gage one or what?
No.
No, we don't show the people we love Nick Gage.
That's the only kind of like hardcore match that she saw.
And we don't show the people we love Nick Gage matches. We just don't. I know that you didn't go to the Wikipedia for Onita. I know that you don't do that.
I did, actually.
Oh, okay. Well, did you read what happened in his political career?
I did not read that part. I read the wrestling part of it.
I'm so excited to be able to do this with you. All right.
I read the wrestling bit.
So I mentioned that he dropped out of high school. He returned and finished education in his late 30s. In 2001, he actually won the 19th House of Councilors election as a representative of the Liberal Democratic Party. So he followed Inoki and Hase into a seat in the Japanese Diet, which is really cool. One of his first major acts in office was to launch a post-9/11 humanitarian mission to Afghanistan, where he performed wrestling matches in crudely constructed rings made of sticks and rope to benefit the children. Thank you. I don't know what else to say about that. It's a very weird thing to do.
I appreciate the sentiment, but also, did he provide them with food and water?
There's more concrete things to do here than have
The wrestling is cool. You know, if you want to like entertain the kids, like that's great. But did you provide them food and water?
This is also verbatim what's written on his Wikipedia. Like fellow professional wrestler Scott Steiner.
Okay. All right. Hold on. Time out. We got
to
stop.
Yes.
We got no. We got to pause. We got
to
pause right there.
The rest of that.
There could be like 17 different things.
What do you think it's going to be about?
It's like, I don't even know. I genuinely, Scott Steiner is such a loose cannon. They're like, the range is kind of infinite on the possibilities of what this next part could be.
Like fellow professional wrestler Scott Steiner, Onita has also claimed to have broken Wilt Chamberlain's record for sleeping with 20,000 women. Coincidentally, his exit from politics was forced by a sex scandal in which he was alleged to have used government accommodations to host a threesome with a pornographic film actress and a female employee from the Ministry of Land, Infrastructure, and Transportation, which for those of you keeping track at home, is the Ministry of LIT, a.k.a. the Ministry of Lit. Shout out.
He did a threesome in that thing. Okay.
Government accommodations.
So when they say that, does that mean like his like hotel room that was like paid for, or does that mean like my brother was in the Chamber of Commerce or whatever the fuck? Fuck it.
I don't know for sure.
Like, I don't know what that is. A very vague thing. Like, is he on like, did he get the freaking is he on like a work trip in a hotel room doing inappropriate things, and then they're just like, whoa, listen, if you want to be in there, you can be in there. But why'd you have to do the threesome with a porn star and a literal government employee?
Yeah, from the Ministry of Lit, which I am not over. I think that's outstanding. After retirement from politics, he lent his name and image to the Nintendo DS game at Atsushi Onita's political quiz.
I need to look up the cover of this game.
Get the bag however you can. What an interesting person Onita. Onita is still freelancing. So as much as we've covered two of his retirements, he still listed as freelancing. His most recent thing that's listed on Wikipedia is a match from Halloween 2021.
It's $10.25 on eBay.
You got a DS at home?
I do, Evan. This is the craziest cover I've ever seen. Oh my God, it's actually so sick.
I gotta look it up too. I can't be missing out on this.
No, people, you need to understand. This is the greatest thing that this...
Oh, I love it.
What the hell? He's just like a... My brother looks like All Might, but like it's Onita. Like, imagine if All Might just had the freaking hair, the black, like, mullety kind of hair, and was also just like a little short... Like, he's not actually an anime. He's like an 8-bit character, kind of, low-key. Just maybe 16 bits. And he's just pointing like this. And it's beautiful. I love it.
I love it. What did you think covering the career of Onita?
This man was an absolute electric factory. And I'm not just saying that because he was literally electrocuted multiple times by explosions. I mean that because I was entertained for every single one of these matches, whether it was the weird karate MMA match or the
match in the that match is what Raw Underground should have been.
Yes. Yeah, it is. Or it was like the freaking exploding death matches, or it was the War Games match that is just a cage match. It doesn't matter. I was so entertained by every single one of these. And honestly, I know I've been saying this a bunch recently. This is the most entertained I've ever been watching a series of matches, probably of any episode that we've done.
This is
like not even recent much. I mean, literally of the 190 whatever episodes we've done, including the bonuses, including YouTube content, this set of matches for Atsushi Onita is the most entertained I have been start to finish with a set of matches.
I think the thing is for me is it takes like a special combination of the matches being engaging and our tangents being random and the person being a wild person. Like, this was a really good episode. And then I told you about what he did after he left wrestling.
And it's just, bro was fucking in the house of in the chamber of commerce. I know that doesn't make any sense and there's no shot it's that, but still.
There's nothing I love better than a sentence that starts like fellow professional wrestler Scott Steiner. It's
the big booty daddy, man.
It's the greatest sentence of all time. I fucking love these matches. It's such a change of pace because we cover, and especially because we cover traditionally so much Western wrestling. We cover a lot of WWE. And like, this shit is you are not seeing in WWE. You're not seeing this in WWF. You're not seeing this in WCW. Like, this is just, it's something entirely different. So I got to give him a shout. Also, there's something to be said about, if you find a thing that entertains the people and if you're willing to commit to it, that's great. It's like clowns who hurt themselves for amusement. Obviously, this is much more graceful than that, and there's a lot more to it, and there's more nuance, there's more character, and there's lots more to it than that. But he found that the people were drawn to the hardcore style, and he was like, fuck it, we lean in. We go all in.
It's Chris Farley. It's physical comedy.
We go all in, make the explosions bigger, get rid of the ropes, add a cage, bring in the Ministry of Wit. We're having a good time. Onita is all about the good times.
20,000 rookie numbers.
Rookie. You got to get those numbers up, son. All right. You should follow us on social media. You should follow Javier wherever he tells you right now.
You know, part of me wants to tell you to pause the podcast so I can go make a sign. But I have integrity, so I'm not going to do it. You can follow me on the Twitter machine at JMelloSports, and I will have a sign one day. I just have to remember to do it.
One day. You can follow me on Twitter at @itsevengomes, itsevangomes. Follow the podcast, most importantly, on Twitter, on Instagram, at @crossbodyofwork. Hey, on Instagram, we have almost 3,000 followers now because we posted some very funny reels. You should go and check us out because that's where all of our good reel content lives. Plus, you can find all of them as YouTube shorts on YouTube. Subscribe. We're on the road to, I don't know, 200 next. That's cool. Yeah. @crossbodyofwork on YouTube. We have some new ideas for some content coming, plus some new branding potentially for the podcast. Very cool stuff is coming our way. Thank you so much for listening. We appreciate you being here. Fullpressshop.com. Cop the merch. Support the boys. Probably potentially some new merch coming to the store too. Very exciting stuff. Fullpresswrestling.com for the links to all of the matches we covered this week. Of course, the recommendations. I have the Hayabusa match. You have the Terry Funk match as a piece of wrestling lore.
Honestly, any of the matches will do.
Any of the matches will do. It will change you fundamentally as a person. Now, who do we cover next week? It's Japanuary, of course. So next week, we move to Masahiro Chono. Very excited. Give the people a one-sentence explainer. Who is Chono?
A staple of New Japan. At one point, one of the three musketeers of that 90s period of New Japan pro wrestling. And honestly, just an all-around dog.
Considering the photos that come up when you just Google his name quickly, this dude's going to be cool as hell. We're going to have back-to-back super cool episodes, and I'm very excited for that. We also have episode 200 coming up soon. Tell us what he wants to do for episode 200. We'll have a really good time regardless. So, you know, we do what we can. That wraps up this week's episode and the first episode of 2024. We will be back soon, but it's time for everyone's favorite part of the podcast. Javier, any final words for the people?
This week on Life Advice with Javier, there are so many things that I could just make life advice for this week because I've done so much over the last like week and a half, two weeks.
You've done
weeks.
So much living.
Yeah, that I could just be like, oh, dude, you got to do this, you got to do that. But more than anything, something really, really impactful to me happened today. that Evan and I haven't spoken about yet, but it's very near and dear to my heart. Ricky Rubio retired today.
Oh shit, he did?
Yeah, Ricky Rubio announced his retirement from the NBA. And for those of you who don't know Ricky Rubio, he is a Spanish basketball player. He's played in the NBA for the last, like, 14 years, something like that. I think it was 12 seasons total that he actually ended up playing. And, you know, he is someone, to me personally, he was, like, my first big international guy. I'm a big fan of European basketball, and the 2008 Olympics, when he was literally a teenager, just cooking everybody, he instantly became one of my favorite players. And then, unfortunately, he got drafted by the Timberwolves ahead of Stephen Curry,
and after Johnny Flynn, was it before? Yes. No, he was before Johnny Flynn, I think.
He was five, Flynn was six, and it, you know. He tore his ACL his rookie year. Things didn't really pan out in his career the way that I think that they should have. He's had his moments at many different stops, but he was just never able to piece it together to truly live up to what the hype was. But to me personally, I will always remember Ricky as just an absolutely electric and entertaining player and just the encapsulation of European basketball, which is, in my opinion, the most beautiful form of it, is that Spanish style that they had in the 2000s and the 2010s. And, you know, he's a fast pass first point guard. He meant so freaking much to me. And you know, he was very vague on it in his retirement notes, but it seems like something he mentioned July, like a day in July.
July 30th, he said, was a tough night, and that he essentially, like, there's some mental health concerns and that he wants to focus on improving his mental health, and that it's improving every day. He's working on it. He's doing much better, getting better every day, but that his NBA career has come to an end. And that's something we have preached on this podcast all the time, is like, there was like, it's about family, it's about friends, it's about keeping yourself right in your own mental health. And like, the fact that Rubio's able to make that decision for himself, it's big, because to walk away from the, like, basketball players love basketball in a way that we don't even understand.
Yeah.
And to walk away from professional basketball when he still could do it, he was still doing well.
He's on the Cavaliers.
He was a member of the Cavs, and, you know, it's kudos to him for being able to make that decision, and I hope that everything goes well for him.
Yes, and I hope that everything's okay with him moving forward. You know, he's still a young guy. He's probably in his early 30s, if I had to take a guess, maybe the mid-30s. But, you know, he's, again, just an incredible player. I really, really wish that he had been able to live up to that potential. But man, I hope that if he is able to get things sorted out, we see him pop up again in the EuroLeague, because he is truly one of the most talented and electric players I've ever seen play basketball. And you know, it's a sad day for me personally, because, you know, that is a guy who deserved to give the game so much more, and it just never was able to happen.
I fucking love a pass first point guard. Yes. That's my people, and Ricky Rubio, that's my kind of guy. All right, we wrap up this week by talking about Ricky Rubio after we talked about Onita for a lot, and he exploded, and it was a wonderful time. We'll be back next week. We got Chono. It's going to be lit. We'll talk to you then.
Lit.